Any examples used are for illustrative purposes only and do not take into account your particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs, and may not be suitable for all investors. It is not intended to predict the performance of any specific investment and is not a solicitation or recommendation of any investment strategy.
Welcome to Safe Money Masters with Greg Castle. Get ready for a full hour of financial information and economic news you can't afford to miss. Greg works hard each and every day to help hardworking Americans like you navigate challenges and reach the financial freedom they desire and deserve. So now let's start the show. Here's Greg Castle.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Safe Money Masters, where our main goal is to help you, our listeners, become masters of your money and teach you how to keep it safe. So, you know, we hope you're having a terrific Tuesday. I'm Greg Castle, and I'll be your host along with my co-host and executive producer, Matt McClure. You know, Matt, here we are again on another terrific Tuesday, and I'm sure we have a terrific Tuesday lineup for our listeners. So why don't you tell them what they can expect to hear on today's show?
Absolutely will, Greg. You know, it gets terrificker and terrificker each week. I think I just invented a word.
Whipstrot, add that to the dictionary.
That's right. That's right. You know, we're nothing if not trendsetters here at Safe Money Masters.
So true.
So there we go. We're just adding words to the dictionary here on a Tuesday. Who else can say that? But, you know, we do have a lot of great things coming up here on the show. A lot of talk about inflation. It's been top of mind for everybody, really, over the past couple of years here, as we've seen prices just, you know, skyrocket in a lot of different categories. We'll take a look at those categories. We'll, of course, start out that inflation conversation with our quote of the week. And this time around, it's going to be from a prominent investor. And when I say a prominent investor, that's probably the understatement of the century, because he's kind of like the prominent investor, really. Mm-hmm. And then where inflation's hitting the hardest, we'll go through the different categories I mentioned a few minutes ago, gas prices and more, how inflation actually impacts retirees and seniors, and why it disproportionately affects people of a certain age here in this country, the need to protect your buying power as well. Is Social Security keeping up with inflation? I bet you kind of know the answer to that question already if you are a Social Security recipient, but we'll go through that and talk about the importance of a strong income plan. We'll also go back and talk a little bit about Life Insurance Awareness Month. It does continue, and we'll have some success stories from the rich and famous. And we might actually have a story from Greg Castle that he was just telling me before we went on air, which is nothing if not hilarious. So we hope to get there along with This Week in History. And, you know, just before we get into kind of the meat of things, Greg, I wanted to mention here to our listeners, if you out there have been listening to us because you're interested in improving your financial situation and hopefully retiring someday, that's the goal, as we always say. Well, here's what we want you to do. Let Castle Financial Solutions help you with some one-on-one attention. You know, there's only one you, right? There's only one financial situation that's like yours. So you need one-on-one attention. And all you have to do is give them a call at 813-430-7100. You can also visit the website at safemoneymasters.com. They'd be happy to meet with you personally and provide customized guidance and solutions based on your specific financial needs. Well, Greg, I think that just about brings us up to time for the aforementioned and much awaited and anticipated quote of the week.
And now for some financial wisdom. It's time for the quote of the week.
This week's quote comes from the most famous investor of all time, at least in our lifetime, Warren Buffett, who once said, quote, "Inflation eats up the fruits of your labor, leaving you with less to enjoy in your golden years," unquote.
Hmm. Boy, just plain and simple, I mean, that is really, really true. Because if you take a step back, obviously, if you're in the midst of inflation, it can be kind of hard to see because you're frustrated, right? You're just like, oh, every time I go to the grocery store, it feels like going to the bank and throwing your money away because it really
gas pump
or the gas pump, right? It's just like just a struggle. each and every time. But overall, like over the long term, if the dollar's not going as far, then you don't have as much in the end that you can really enjoy in those what are supposed to be your golden years anyway.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, talking about Warren Buffett, he's had a lot of time to come up with a lot of quotes. And there are so many quotes we've used on this show already. A couple of them were attributed to Warren Buffett. I looked up his age today. How old do you think Warren Buffett is?
Oh, gosh. He has got to be he's got to be in his 80s, I would think.
93.
Really?
Really, that's what I said. I thought he was in his 80s as well. 93 years young in his case.
And going strong.
Going strong.
Yeah, I mean, born 1930 there. And of course, yeah. One of the world's most successful investors, a prominent philanthropist as well. Value investing, that's really what he is all about. And he's one of the wealthiest investors globally, one of the wealthiest people in the world as well. And, he's an advocate for the long game, right? And playing the long game and really being patient with your investments.
So true. He's a great investor to follow. If you do what he does, then you might have a portion of his success.
We could all hope.
He has definitely done it right. But anyway, Matt, before we get into today's topics, you know, I'd like to take another minute just to once again remind our listeners what our show is all about. I mean, the whole premise of this show is to bring all of you topics and tools and information that's going to help you protect and grow your wealth and retirement income. So obviously, we hope you keep tuning in. You can catch us every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. on 1010 a.m. and your local FM stations 92.1 and 103.1 up north. If you happen to miss an episode, you can always catch the replay at safemoneymasters.com. Just go to the website, then click on the podcast tab, and it'll take you right there. Or you can always listen to the podcast on your favorite podcast station. You can also check out our YouTube channel and subscribe to see our weekly, video highlights and special content. And of course, if you have any special comments that we would obviously love to hear from you, so feel free to email me personally at greg@safemoneymasters.com, or you can give me a call at 813-430-7100. And, we're asked all the time, what exactly can we do for you? And the real answer is it depends. It depends on your situation. It depends on, what it is that you're looking for and what you want retirement to look like for you. But there's a number of different things that we can do to help you achieve those things. One is, provide comprehensive consultations. It never costs you a penny for those. Never any obligation. Hopefully there's a mutual fit. If you think that we're good for you and we think you're good for us, then, we would love to help you out. Our only requirement isn't a monetary retirement, unlike Fisher Investments, who wants you to have $500,000. Our only requirement is that you'd be nice. We want to deal with nice people. We don't want to deal with those people that aren't nice. Let's put it that way. I can't say the other word on radio, so I better move on. We can always help you analyze your financial situation. We can play around with numbers to see, which scenario is going to be best for what you're trying to achieve in retirement. We can make recommendations for you. Closely examine any assets you may have and make recommendations of anything you might be able to do differently, if anything needs to be done differently. We can also discover exactly how much you're paying in fees, because fees can really eat into your retirement savings, and we can help you, cut unnecessary costs and fees from your IRA, your 401k, or other, retirement savings accounts. But one of the biggies, it seems so simple, but, one of the things we can also help you with is Social Security planning. Most people think, okay, I'm 62, I'm eligible, so I'll take it, at least by the time I hit, 63, 64, 65, or your full retirement age around 66 to 67. Sometimes those aren't the best options depending on your situation. Sometimes they're necessary options. Anyway, we can also help you explore strategies to help you maximize retirement income and minimize your taxes. So as we always say on this show, just remember that it's your money. If it matters to you, it matters to us.
That is absolutely right. And you mentioned Social Security there just a moment ago, Greg. We're going to have a lot of Social Security talk coming up here in just a little bit as we sort of dive into our inflation discussion, because, you know, Social Security tries to keep up. How good of a job does it do? That is another question. But at least there is an attempt to keep up with the actual rising cost of goods and services out there. So there are a lot of contributing causes to the inflation that we have seen over the past, you know, year or two here. And we've really seen it skyrocket. We've seen the Federal Reserve combat inflation by raising interest rates. That has, been something that we've been watching actually just this past week. We got a break from that because the Fed said we're going to leave it alone at the moment, take a pause here, see, you know, kind of step back, see what the economy does with interest rates at their current point. But I mean, now they're the highest that they've been in a long, long time, back from, you know, when they were at or near zero for the previous 10 plus years. But there are a few contributing causes to the inflation picture here. So what we're going to do is, as we start out our conversation, talk about a few of them. And the first thing is demand for a commodity.
Yeah, right before getting to explaining that, just, inflation last year, rose above 9%. And it really, the economy suffered because of it. And last year, all the indexes and markets were down. This year, we got down to a 3% a little while back. But in August, inflation rose again up to 3.7%. As you said, the Federal Reserve decided to take a pass on raising the rates this time. However, just for future reference, they did say that, they're leaving the options open to raise them again this year up to two more times. And also, there is a possibility that those increases could continue on to the next year. So until inflation actually starts to come down, we're probably going to see some high interest rates. So it goes back to what we're talking about now is, why interest rates so high? I mean, why is inflation so high, I should say? And you mentioned demand for commodity. When the demand for commodity exceeds its supply, for example, gas, housing, whatever, whenever the commodity exceeds supply, then the excess demand pushes the price up because, if there's a scarcity or something, people who need it or want it will pay more to get it.
Yeah, that's very true. And it's just one of the contributing factors here to inflation. There is also something that we've seen quite a bit of, especially due to the pandemic. We already had a lot of spending coming out of D.C., but we've got even more now because of the COVID-19 pandemic and all the different, economic stimulus packages and rescue packages and things like that were passed during that time. Talking about deficit financing of government spending.
Yeah, it's a big, long phrase to really explain something very simple that I think we all recognize. We just didn't know the term for it. And that is that, there are times when the spending of government increases beyond what taxation can finance. Every politician, was running the platform of we're going to lower taxes, especially for the middle class. But without taxes, we can't afford to pay our national debt. So, therefore, in order to incur the extra expenditure, the government resorts to deficit financing. For example, it prints more money than it spends. It prints more money than what we can spend. And this, in turn, adds to inflationary pressure. So it's basically printing money that we don't have. It's like writing checks with no money in the bank.
And, that's not a good thing. The banker will give you a call and it will not be a happy conversation when that happens.
Yeah, considering we've spent over, $4 trillion in the last few years since COVID, bear in mind, a lot of that was necessary just to keep the economy afloat and to keep us from going into a real, real deep recession. Still, we printed a lot of money that we have got to find a way to pay back. And unfortunately, the best way to make that happen is going to be taxation down a road somewhere.
Yeah. And, there's got to be a solution, of course. And that, unfortunately, seems to be the most likely thing for your pocketbook and my pocketbook. But, getting any kind of plan in Washington, I feel like, for anything these days is a little bit difficult, because the way I put it is like, it's hard getting people in D.C. to agree that the sky is blue on any given day. So
it's hard to get people in the same party to agree on things. If you take a look at what happened, you know, last week, trying to curb the government shutdown.
This is very true. And, you know, you got one party in control of the House, and, you know, a lot of squabbling going on there. You got another party in control of the Senate, and things always move slow in the Senate. So it's just it's not one battle, it's another here. Another contributing cause for inflation, the increased velocity of circulation. That sounds like a very sort of wonky kind of an aspect of all of this here, Greg. But spell it out for us in layman's terms, if you will.
All right. I mean, it's actually something very simple. When the economy is going through a booming phase, in other words, everything is going great, people are out and about and spending money, then people, you know, they spend money at a faster rate, which increases the velocity of circulation of money. In other words, there's more money out on the town, basically, because people are spending money. And with all that money out in circulation, it's another way of increasing inflation.
Very good. That is a simple concept. It sounded a little bit like I was going to have a physics lesson there for a second, the increased velocity. But yeah, so more money in the system kind of going, you know, flowing through the economy there. Population growth as well, obviously something that we've seen for a long time. And in different areas now, I think a lot of people are leaving some parts of the country, going to others, and driving up populations in places where maybe it had been a little bit more steady over the past, you know, previous years or even decades.
Yeah, and you can take a look at, I mean, in simple terms, how population growth actually affects the inflation is that as a population grows, it increases the total demand of the market. So in other words, you know, the grocery store now has more people it has to feed. So it has to have, you know, more goods on thing. Gas stations go through more gas. People need housing. So, you know, houses are right now at a premium for a lot of reasons. You know, part of that is part of the reason they've grown so fast in value is because people are hanging on to it because they don't want to have to, you know, sell a house with a very low interest rate and get one with a very higher interest rate. And so as demand is a question, as supply is not there, but people still need housing, it goes up. So even though single family housing, for example, is still going, but it's not going as fast as it was, the number of apartment complexes that are, you know, coming about right now are just exponential. Basically, they're trying to find a way to make sure that people have availability of housing. It won't be cheap, but there's places for people to live because there is that demand. And that, of course, is because of population growth, which is another factor that fuels inflation.
It all comes back in the end to supply and demand. And there's another example of it there. You know, the more demand there is, if the supply stays the same, then prices are going to go up. And that is just kind of the way that the economy works and is one of those fundamental rules. Hoarding is also another thing. Now, I have seen those shows on like TLC or A&E and all those, where it's, you know, the people are literally living, they clean out their house, they're living with stuff stacked up to the ceiling. They find a couple of dead cats under boxes and stuff when they clean it out. I don't think you mean that kind of hoarding, or at least not extreme hoarding like that.
No, but it still fits in the same vein. In other words, people will hold on to things. You know, for example, a lot of people collect coins. So, you know, those coins, you know, you may not even totally collect them, but you know, we throw them in a box somewhere or basket somewhere or piggy bank somewhere, and we don't actually spend those things. That's an example of hoarding. Another way of hoarding is that, again, sometimes there are household items that people need or want, and people just don't want to let go of what they've got. There's no circulation of those items anymore. So all of this, when people hoard things, it leads to, you know, inflation because there's a demand for things that people can't get.
Yeah.
So stop your hoarding.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't end up on a TV special. We don't want to see you there throwing all your stuff in a dumpster and people having to drag it from you, kicking and screaming.
Just stop hoarding around, okay?
Yes, there we go. Hoarding around.
That's when I say it, hoarding.
The D was there, we promise. So hoarding is that one. Also, you know, a genuine shortage of things. And this is something that we saw, completely during the pandemic because, the supply chain was just, had just ground to a halt because of, shortage of workers, so much being shut down because of health concerns and all of that. This is one that we got really, really familiar with, a genuine shortage of items out in the market.
Yeah, a genuine shortage comes in a lot of things. For example, labor shortages, when people can't go to work or people, won't work in some cases because of fear of the pandemic in this case. Also, there are, because of supply chain issues, factories sometimes are really crippled because not only do they have labor shortages, but they've also got parts shortages and they can't, for example, cars have a lot of moving parts on them. To make a car, if you don't have, certain things, that car cannot be complete if it's only missing one or two parts. I wouldn't want to drive a car down a road that's missing a motor mount somewhere, for example, or if it's missing a seat belt, for the kids or whatever. But in this case, one of the biggest shortages we had were chip shortages, where we couldn't get the chips we needed to work all the electronics we've become used to. I remember the days when cars were nice and simple. My 67 Camaro Rally Sport, very simple instrument cluster. I could work on the car. Now it costs me more to fix what I break trying to fix something simple than it would have cost me to take it to the repair shop and get it done because I don't have the tools to make it happen because it's so complicated. So anyway, genuine shortage of things could actually lead to inflation and create a lot of problems with the economy as well.
Yeah, I remember driving by, there's one, and it seems like this is the way that it works in a lot of cities and towns, is that there's sort of one thoroughfare through a city or town where there are a lot of car dealerships on that one road. In my hometown, where I'm originally from, where my mom and the rest of my family, immediate family, still lives, there's this road, and I remember driving through during sort of the height of the pandemic, and even into probably 2022, and just seeing at least like three quarters empty lots at the car dealerships where there were just like a few, and they try to space them out, to make it look like there were more cars there than there actually were, but it was still, it's kind of depressing. Thankfully it's gotten better, but that's one of those examples of a genuine shortage of things. And we sort of have run through this and answered a little bit of this question, but I'll pose the overall question for you, specific to this particular time that we're going through right now. Why has inflation become such a problem now in 2023?
As we talked about a little bit earlier, the COVID-19 pandemic disrupted global supply chains, and that led prices to surge as the economy, basically began to reopen. And consumers unleashed pent-up demand, while there was still a shortage of goods on the shelves. In other words, remember when all of the paper towels, you couldn't buy paper towels or toilet paper. So, and all of a sudden when it was there again, people went out and began to hoard it because, there were fear that something would, it would come back around again real quick. So people have massive supplies of toilet paper in their houses now.
We had a supply that lasted us for, maybe a year. It was great. I didn't have to go to the store and buy any, but we actually got lucky early on. And I think ordered some from like Sam's or one of the Costco or one of those places and had it delivered early on in the pandemic. And it lasted a long time.
I remember before whatever happened, before COVID came around, I started to go to, I'd make a Costco run and I forgot to pick up toilet paper. That's before we knew we necessarily needed a bunch of it. And all of a sudden, you can't find it all. You can't find it anymore. Yeah. And then I actually went to the office and went to the men's and women's bathroom in the office and swiped what I could. I hope they don't hear this, but anyway. Necessity, desperate people do desperate things. And I was desperate at that point because we had no toilet paper in the house. So
those are desperate times.
we should move on with this with, just talking about the reason for inflation in 2023. The Russian invasion of Ukraine sort of exacerbated backlogs of the global supply chain and fueled higher prices for food, energy, and other commodities. So that was a biggie. And also, a hot labor market, led employers to raise wages along with some of the legislation that's been passed. But they've raised wages at the fastest pace in decades, which feeding through inflation because people all of a sudden have money, which goes back to the circulation, issue where there's more money that's going into the economy. So those are just three factors of why inflation has become such a problem with 2023, along with all the other factors we talked about before that raised inflation. The same things are still true here now.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Some rules we have not broken, I guess, in 2023. And those are some of them there leading to inflation this time around. And just like, we've seen in previous times of high inflation, it's hitting in some areas harder than in others. Take a look for us, if you will, Greg. We've got some numbers here from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the CPI Consumer Price Index. As of the numbers actually year over year between last August and this August, run through where inflation is kind of hitting us the hardest right now.
It's hitting us hardest in the pocketbook.
That much is true. Yes.
in what way? Groceries, one of the commodities, groceries are actually up 4.3% over last year. Food away from home, eating out basically, is 6.5% more expensive according to that report. Rent's gone up almost 8% since last year. Electricity, I can vouch for this one here in Tampa. Electricity's gone up a little over 2% over last year. Garbage collection, we don't think about that, but that rate went up as well. It's almost 9% more expensive than last year. And then when it comes to your vehicle, motor vehicle insurance is up almost 20% over last year. Vehicle repairs up 17% over last year. New vehicles are running almost 3% over last year. And when it comes to personal care and health care, over the counter drugs are about 7.5% more expensive than last year. Hygiene products for dental, hair, shaving, those type things are a little less than 7.5% more expensive. And baby food and formula, which is really, really important. It's about 8.5% more expensive than last year. So it just gives you an example of how things are hitting us in the pocketbook right now. Hopefully Federal Reserve and folks can get the inflation under wraps and hopefully get interest rates back down so people can afford to do some things.
Yeah, that would be very nice. You mentioned there one of the things that was kind of the more unusual category that I noticed was that garbage collection thing. But the garbage trucks, they do run on gas for the most part. And gas prices, though, that's one of those things that has just been making matters worse, especially here lately, as we've seen another rise in gas prices, which thankfully it looks like it might be coming down or at least starting a journey downward a little bit. But boy, it's been kind of skyrocketing here in numbers that we haven't seen in probably more than a year.
Well, it was coming down. And then, last week, the oil prices increased to almost $100 a barrel.
Yeah.
So you can probably expect prices to go up at least temporarily until, gas and oil futures actually come down a little bit. Anyway, so where is gas most expensive right now? Unfortunately, if you live out west, where you live in one of the cold or extremely warm places like Hawaii or Alaska, you're going to pay more for gas than our eastern counterparts. California is the highest with the average rate of 5.69% per gallon. Washington's, $5 and a nickel a gallon. Nevada's just under $5 a gallon at 4.92. Hawaii is at $4.80 a gallon. Oregon, $4.70 a gallon. Alaska, $4.61 a gallon, Arizona, $4.55 a gallon, and Utah, $4.30 a gallon. So here in Tampa, when I go to Costco, I think I went the other day and I was able to get it for $3.49 a gallon. So I should be thrilled compared to these prices.
That's right. It's all a matter of perspective. It really, really is. And when you look at that, I mean, I remember going to earlier this year, went to the Medicarians conference out in Las Vegas and just looked at, and I kind of did a double take the first time I passed by. And granted, it was just like a block off the strip, this gas station, but looked at the sign and I just had kind of had to, you know, take a step back and almost fainted when I looked at the price. But yeah, it was those prices out west just tend to run so much higher than they do here in the eastern U.S. And a lot of different reasons, a lot of different factors go into that.
I'll tell you, how much things have gone up, though, when it comes to gas. As I remember, you know, back during the pandemic or right after the pandemic, whenever that people actually started coming out of their houses again. Again, I went to Costco or Sam's, one of the two, and I took a picture of the price of gas. I was able to get, you know, regular gas for $1.59 a gallon.
Wow.
Didn't last long as far as the pricing goes, but at least for a while, it was between $1.50 and $1.70 a gallon here. So, you know, again, now it's gone from that up to, it's doubled up to $3.49, I think.
Wow.
Not long ago.
There are certain, just like certain categories of inflation are, you know, or certain categories of items, goods, services, that kind of thing, are affected more by inflation. Inflation itself affects different, you know, categories of people in different ways. And why do you think that inflation hurts retirees and seniors kind of in a disproportionate way compared to others?
Well, you know, retirees tend to spend a larger portion of their income on items that are highly affected by inflation. In other words, you know, if you're a retiree or senior listening to this show, you're likely to spend a large part of your income on housing, food, gas, healthcare, those type things, all of which you're, you know, seeing the full effects of inflation. So additionally, you know, inflation hurts those who are living off savings or basically fixed income and have less money invested in the market, which could otherwise provide higher yields. You know, retirees are also much more likely to be dependent on their savings than a younger working person who, you know, might be able to receive cost of living increases to their salary and can afford to have more money at risk in the market. But, you know, also the rise of inflation leaves a lot of retirees with difficult decisions on how to protect their retirement savings while still covering their cost of living. Pensions are a common source of retirement for a lot of, I won't say a lot, but for a few retirees, unless you count Social Security, the pension, which it actually is to a type. You know, but many pensions are struggling to keep up with inflation. So, you know, most private pensions don't offer COLA or cost of living allowances or adjustments. And you see those with Social Security, but even those don't normally keep up with the pace of inflation. So those are just some of the reasons why seniors are affected, basically because many seniors living on fixed income, where in their younger years or people who are younger now have the ability to continue to make money. Usually they're healthy, they're younger, they're beginning their careers. And older folks or, you know, seniors, in a lot of cases, their careers are over. They've been put out to pasture, hence the living on fixed income. So hopefully you're not one of those put out to pasture. If you are, then you know, the one way to do it is, you know, find a way to bust out of the gate and, you know, get back to some pretense of activity again.
There you go. Well, and you just mentioned it, you know, Social Security, a main source of income for a lot of retirees out there, most retirees. So why isn't the cost of living adjustment, the COLA for Social Security, why does it not really keep pace with inflation each year? Because there is a cost of living adjustment each and every year, and it is indexed to a measure of inflation. So you would think that, oh, let's keep it up, but kind of not really.
Yeah, you're right. The you know, while Social Security does offer COLAs, you know, they often fall short of the actual increases in prices. You know, because of this, you know, retirees relying on Social Security, you could see insufficient income moving forward. In other words, inflation goes up to 4 or 5%, and their COLAs are only, you know, 2 or 3% in some cases. Last year was a big adjustment at 8.7%, but this year they're projecting a much lower rate. And also, according to the Senior League research, Social Security benefits have lost over 30% of the purchasing power since 2000. Basically, that's due in part to inadequate COLAs and rising healthcare costs. So to address this growing issue, you know, Senior Citizen League urges Congress to adopt legislation that would basically base the COLA on an inflation index specifically for seniors, that the consumer price index for the elderly, which is basically the CPIE, that index is currently used to measure inflation, and as opposed to the consumer price index for urban wage earners, CPIW, which underestimates inflation for Social Security beneficiaries experienced because it doesn't effectively consider expenses like health care or housing, which, of course, seniors have to pay. So those are just some of the reasons why seniors aren't keeping up with inflation.
Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, the Social Security cost of living adjustment there for next year. What's kind of the prediction, the forecast for what that's going to be for 2024 and even beyond, if we know?
It's not good. The Senior Citizens League said on Wednesday of last week, that the Social Security cost of living adjustment, or COLA, is likely going to be 3.2% for 2024, which is still good, but, you know, it's certainly not the 8.7% they got last year. You know, overall, the inflation rate is significantly lower than a year ago. You know, however, most older Americans really report that persistently high prices still affect their household budgets. So that's just one of the reasons, or one of the outlooks for this coming year.
Yeah. And there's actually been, you know, obviously a lot of talk about the future of Social Security, the future of Medicare as well. What are they saying as far as the Social Security Administration from, I know we get a lot of information here from ssa.gov, the Social Security Administration website. What are kind of the predictions for the future of those two programs?
You know, again, the predictions are good unless something's actually done. But, you know, the Old Age and Survivors Insurance Trust Fund, which is what we refer to as basically Social Security Trust Fund, is going to be able to pay 100% of their total scheduled benefits until 2033, which is 10 years from now. So that's actually a year earlier than reported last year. So last year's we're going to pay to 2034. Now it's been shortened to 2033. You know, at that time, the fund's reserves will become depleted and continuing program income will be sufficient to pay roughly three quarters, or basically 77% of the scheduled benefits.
Yeah. And so when you're talking about that, I mean, if it's only going to be able to pay 77% of scheduled benefits, what does that mean for retirees and pre-retirees alike?
It means basically your Social Security paycheck is going to be cut. You're going to basically lose 25% or 23% in this case of your money. So, you know, benefits paid out of the program basically have exceeded the money coming in since 2021. And of course, over the years, our elected officials have dipped into the Social Security fund to siphon money off that to use other programs, which is part of the reason we're being depleted. So unless we do something to raise Social Security taxes, there's a number of different options that are out there. We've talked about those in other shows, but just basically, you know, one of the options is to increase the Social Security age. Another option is to increase the amount of Social Security taxes that are in your paycheck, coming out of your paycheck, you know, every week or biweekly, however you get paid. And then, you know, I think I already mentioned raising retirement age, but there's just a number of different options that people have. That we actually have. And I think most of us, to realize that Social Security would be there, would be willing to pay a little extra out of our paycheck, you know, to make sure Social Security is funded. But our elected officials don't seem to be in any hurry to take any action. They're almost like a lot of us were in college where, you know, we started our term paper the night before it was due. That's kind of like what we did this time with the government shutdown. You know, we've done it several times with budget shortages every year. Just for whatever reason, you know, they don't seem to be doing the job we sent them there to do. It doesn't matter which side of the party you're on. And we've got both sides have issues. So I'm not trying to say one side's better than the other, but I'm just saying that collectively, they're not exactly very efficient lately.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And right, we're not picking sides here or anything like that, but overall, that is a very true statement. to make there. So, I mean, yeah, it's not, it's frustrating because we all know that something needs to be done. Everybody agrees that something needs to be done. And so it's like, why aren't you doing something? You're not a college student. It's not your midterm tomorrow. It's the livelihoods of retirees in this country that we're talking about. It's just, you just want to shake people a little bit.
Yeah, really. So I tell you what, for all you listeners out there, correctly choosing, when to start Social Security is perhaps one of the most important decisions you're ever going to make when planning for retirement. I know it seems so simple. I say this time and time again, but it's really not that simple. And when you take it depends on a lot of situations. You need somebody to help you out with strategy with that. So if anything that we said to you here about Social Security and the fact that, your retirement plan may have your, full Social Security going forever, you need to have a plan that's actually going to make sure that you can make it if you have those cuts and those cuts come to fruition. So we'd love to help you out with that. Feel free to give us a call at 813-430-7100. Or you can email us at greg@safemoneymasters.com. Again, that number is 813-430-7100. Look forward to talking to you.
Very good. And great, something great for you to do because of all of the concerns that we have just been discussing here about Social Security and anything else that you want to discuss financially speaking about your future. Well, this is the last week, which I cannot believe, of the month of September. So it's the last week of Life Insurance Awareness Month. So we're going to continue our discussion about life insurance. And it really is important to know the types of life insurance policies that are out there, which ones are available, which policy type is right for you. It's not just the old death insurance. In other words, life insurance can offer support for you for your family when you pass away. It can help cover the cost of final expenses, but also depending on what type of life insurance you choose, it can also give you some extra income during your retirement, which I think is a big eye opener for people when they're like, wait a minute, I can actually get benefits from a life insurance policy. Yeah. So, I mean, going back to the basics here, once again, as we spread awareness about life insurance, Greg, basically, what is life insurance?
Well, very simply put, life insurance is a contract between the insurer, typically a company or carrier, and you, the policyholder. So, the contract solidifies a promise to pay a death benefit to your designated beneficiary when you pass away. But, today's insurance is different than insurance years ago. Years ago, basically, the insurance only paid out when you died. But many of the policies today actually have something known as living benefits, to where if something happens where you actually needed the money today, there are certain benefits that you could access while you're still alive to help combat a terminal illness or combat a chronic disease or whatever. So it's really, really important.
Yeah.
But life insurance is basically a contract between you and the carrier.
Yeah, very, very important stuff there. And there are, when we speak about life insurance, we're not just speaking about one thing. There are kind of three different buckets that we can put life insurance into, right? Three different main sort of types of product offerings in the industry. There's term life and there's whole life, I think, which people are kind of familiar with, at least those terms, that terminology. And there's also annuities, which people are kind of may or may not know is actually a life insurance product. But each has a number of variations that go along with it, right? So explain those for the listeners, if you don't mind, Greg, and give some examples of those variations, their possible uses.
Term life, you got things like annual term, which basically is what it says. Those are the things you get from like AARP and all the different things. So you can buy this for pennies on the dollar. You can for the first year, but then all of a sudden it's going to go up the next year and every year after. There's level term, which basically you can get a 5, 10, 20, 30-year level term policy. The premium will never go up. Term basically does not have cash value. Term basically is just that. You have a death benefit, and with some living benefits in some cases, over the term of the policy. Declining term, For example, if it's mortgage protection, you might have a term that declines as your mortgage declines. You get term with a return of premium. In some cases, it'll cost you more. But if you don't die before you actually, you know, the term is up, then you actually can get a return or a portion of return, the premium you paid. When it comes to whole life is also comes in based on whether we call a basic or ordinary policy, which is just what it says. This is the amount of coverage you got. It's going to build some cash value. It won't build very quickly, but it's basically considered an asset as opposed to a liability. You got guaranteed issue. Guaranteed issue is normally when you have health issues or whatever, it's going to cost you a little more. Guaranteed issue is used a lot for final expense insurance. You can't get a lot of it, but it's guaranteed that you can get it. Universal life, we've talked about before. And a single premium whole life, which basically you can take a portion of your life savings, pay a single premium, and for pennies on the dollar, basically you can insure yourself, your estate, or whatever. A lot of folks use single premium whole life to offset what may be estate taxes down the road somewhere. Annuities come in a lot of different flavors too. You got fixed annuity, basically just a set rate for a period of time. You got the fixed index annuity, which is tied to an index but not actually invested in it. That's one of our favorite products here on Safe Money Masters. Variable is something to where you actually have a portion of your money at risk in the market or indexes. The other part is actually in insurance. It's something we don't normally recommend for retirees unless you have a lot of outstanding assets. Also, MIGAs, multi-year guaranteed annuities. You get a guaranteed rate for a period of time. They're almost always going to be bank CD rates. They may not be able to beat or exceed market rates, but usually they're pretty good. And those are short-term products. You got a SPIA, single premium immediate annuity, which is basically you're going to give the carrier a pot of money. And for that pot of money, they're going to start immediately giving you a guaranteed income for the rest of your life that you cannot outlive. So those are the basics.
That guaranteed income part is always the music to people's ears there, because you need something. You need guarantees in life, and that can be one of them with that kind of retirement plan for you using an annuity. Also, okay, so it being Life Insurance Awareness Month, we're not only sort of giving the facts, the figures, and all of that, but we wanted to share some life insurance success stories of the rich and famous, and some names that you might recognize and some that you might not here, Greg. About 5.5 minutes left in the show, by the way. So let's talk about the very first one, Walt Disney.
You know, here in Florida, we're all familiar with Walt Disney. And of course, we all love the mouse, so it's great. Walt Disney's story is almost too hard to believe. I mean, one of their most popular characters was stolen by another studio years ago, and their best animator jumped ship. So the studio was chronically understaffed and almost always in debt. In fact, Walt Disney struggled financially for years and on the brink of bankruptcy. So fast forward to the early 1950s. This is kind of amazing. You know, the only amusement parks in the entire country were horrifically dilapidated places peppered with, you know, rusting, creaky rides known only for their filthy bathrooms and the drunks that always hung around there. You know, and Walt dreamed of instead an immaculately clean amusement park filled with imaginative rides, a place where families weren't afraid to eat the food. Everyone whom he presented this idea thought he was crazy and told him so to his face. Even his brother Roy, who was also his business partner, financial manager, told him it couldn't be done. So determined to achieve his dream, you know, Walt had no choice but to move ahead on his own. So he was turned down by traditional financing. So what he did was he emptied his savings account, sold his vacation home in Palm Springs, and recruited the help of a few employees who shared his vision. Then he used a loan. This is important. He used a loan from his cash value life insurance policies to help finance the park. You know, Roy later admitted that he had no idea where Walt's money was coming from, but decided not to ask. So Disneyland opened on September 8, 1955 with 18 attractions. It welcomed 500,000 visitors in the first month it was open. By the end of the first year, it had hosted more than 3.5 million guests, which is less than 3 years later. And less than 3 years later, it welcomed its 10th million visitor. a number that exceeded well-known national landmarks like Yellowstone and the Grand Canyon.
I would say that qualifies as a success story. Just going to put that out there. Let's share one more. I think we have time for one more of these success stories here before we get to This Week in History, Greg. And I will let you be the picker and chooser of which one we share with the listeners.
Let's go with Ray Kroc. Everybody's familiar with McDonald's. So, Ray Kroc came from humble beginnings to build the world's largest restaurant chain we all know as McDonald's. In 1954, at the age of 52, as a milkshake machine salesman, Ray took notice of a hamburger stand in San Bernardino, California. And what he did, he saw the two legendary golden arches and saw lines of people queued up for the restaurant's simple fare, burgers, fries, and milkshakes. So Ray managed to convince the brothers to sell McDonald's name and trade secrets to him. And he worked out a deal to pay for it with a percentage of the receipts for the first few years. Then McDonald's was on its way to becoming a household name. So in 1955, Ray opened his first McDonald's drive-in in Des Plaines, Illinois. While things inside the restaurant ran smoothly, Ray faced massive challenges with cash flow, franchises, competition, and the economy in general. But he was determined to be successful, and he spent year after year working day and night to build his company. In order to build the largest fast food chain in the world and overcome constant cash flow problems, Ray took out loans on two cash value life insurance policies in order to get his infant company off the ground. He used some of the money to create an endearing advertising campaign that centered around that mascot we all know and love, Ronald McDonald. Now, Ray Kroc passed away from old age in January of 1984, just 10 months before McDonald's sold its 50 billionth, with a B, hamburger. At the time of his death, there were over 7,500 McDonald's worldwide. Today, as I looked this up today, there are over 40,000 restaurants worldwide, and McDonald's is the largest food service retailer with operations in over 65 countries.
Wow. Again, another a success story that would not have been nearly as big a success and maybe a success at all without the use of life insurance. Just amazing. And if any of that interests you folks, once again, you can call Castle Financial Solutions Group at 813-430-7100 to find out more, maybe how you can leverage your life insurance or some other assets and make your life a little bit better in the future.
It's This Week in History.
On this date, 1960, the first televised U.S. presidential debate happened on TV. It was between U.S. presidential candidates John F. Kennedy and Vice President Richard Nixon. In 1960, the American sitcom The Brady Bunch premiered on ABC, and it became the enduring pop culture phenomenon. Marsha. Anyway, 1962, American TV series The Beverly Hillbillies debuted on CBS, becoming one of the most popular sitcoms of the 1960s. And in 1969, the Beatles released Abbey Road, which was their last recorded album, even though Let It Be, though mostly recorded earlier than Abbey Road, was released later in 1970. Birthdays today, Serena Williams, tennis star, 41 years old, won every major tournament that there is out there. Jim Caviezel, 54 years old. He played in the Passion of the Christ, The Thin Red Line. And then Olivia Newton-John, by the way, he would be 54 today. Olivia Newton-John would have turned 75 today, multiple Grammy winner, award-winning actress and singer. Of course, we remember her from Greece. And today is National Pancake Day, National Chimichanga Day, National Family Day, National Amanda Day, National Praise and Worship Day. So I had pancakes for breakfast today. I think I'm going to have a chimichanga for lunch, or I had a chimichanga for lunch today. I'm going to call my family and see if they still remember who I am. I don't know anybody named Amanda, so she's off the hook. And at the end of the day, I will give a little praise and worship for the fact that we got through this radio show on time.
And there we go. As always, we do. Well, Greg, yeah, that's going to just about do it here. But I appreciate you, sir, as always. And we will talk to you next time.
Same bat time.
Same bat channel.
See you, folks. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to Safe Money Masters with Greg Castle. You deserve to work with a financial expert who has a track record of helping clients exceed their financial goals by implementing safe and proven strategies. To schedule your free, no-obligation consultation with Greg, visit SafeMoneyMasters.com. Not affiliated with the United States government, Greg Castle does not offer tax, legal, or investment advice. Consult with your tax advisor or attorney regarding specific situations. Opinions expressed are subject to change without notice. These opinions are not intended as investment advice, nor do they predict future performance of any product. All information provided is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation or warranty as to the accuracy of any statement. This information is intended to be educational in nature and does not provide a guarantee or specific result. All copyrights and trademarks are the property of their respective owners. AmeriLife assumes no responsibility or liability for the content of this message. The information contained herein is provided on an as-is basis with no guarantees of completeness, accuracy, usefulness, timeliness, or the results obtained from the use of this information.
Fixed annuities, including multi-year guaranteed rate annuities, are not designed for short-term investments and may be subject to restrictions, fees, and surrender charges as described in the annuity contract. Guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying ability of the issuer.